You're listening to Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Not sure about global warming? Here's a little fact that should grab your attention. According to scientists at the University of Hawaii, the world's oceans are hotter than they have ever been in recorded history. It's a dangerous trend, and you and I may have triggered that fever. We have one of the world's top climate scientists joining us now. Dr. Kevin Trenberth is a transplanted New Zealander. He's now the Distinguished Senior Scientist in the Climate Analysis Section at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. His advice in science is cited all over the world. Kevin, thank you for taking the time to join us.
You're most welcome.
According to news reports, water off New England is warming faster than almost anywhere on Earth. Why is that, and what does it mean?
Off of New England, the North Atlantic has certainly been warm in recent years, and this has been a factor in some of the hurricane activity and the nature of the hurricane activity that has occurred in the Atlantic. But it's probably a transient of some sort or the other, something that occurs on a decadal time frame. And we think part of the reason the North Atlantic is as warm as it is actually stems back to some of the actions in the Pacific Ocean through what atmospheric scientists call teleconnections, large waves in the atmosphere that have been associated with actually cooler conditions in Europe at that time. And so the main cold outbreaks that occurred in a number of recent years have been in Europe rather than over the North Atlantic. And as a result, the North Atlantic has been more benign and the temperatures have warmed up there.
What about the west coast of North America? Are Pacific currents warmer than usual, and have you heard about impacts on marine species off the coast?
Well, that's certainly true this year, and so things have warmed up considerably. There's been quite a substantial change in the weather patterns this year, and normally, I haven't heard any particular information about this, but normally that kind of pattern is very adverse for salmon fishery, for instance. So the colder California current is not as active. The upwelling of nutrients and minerals that are really helpful for many fish. And there are certain kinds of species of fish that migrate a lot further north than they normally would. And I have seen some news reports of that sort of thing. And so, indeed, this does have consequences for the fisheries.
Kevin, is it possible ocean heating off North America could be balanced by ocean cooling in other parts of the globe?
Well, that's certainly true. I mean, that's what generally happens around the world, and we see that in the sea level record and also when we look in detail at the ocean temperature record. So up until the end of 2013, all of the warm water was tending to pile up across near the Philippines and the Western Pacific, and in fact that was a factor in the big super typhoon that occurred in November of last year called Haiyan that did tremendous amounts of damage, and the warm waters over the western side were also a factor in the fairly active hurricane season this year. But there's a developing El Nino, and I think we're actually really in El Nino conditions. And that has altered conditions throughout the tropics and subtropics and is also having an influence up the west coast of North America. And so there was a very active hurricane season in the eastern Pacific this year. One of the consequences of that was the two hurricanes or tropical storms that went through Hawaii. And there was a couple of tropical storms that did a little right-hand hook and went, they missed California, but they went into Arizona. And that's the sort of thing we expect to see when we have these warm conditions out in the Pacific.
So is there a global trend in ocean temperatures, and how confident are we in the data?
Well, yes, the overall global temperatures are increasing, and perhaps the best measure of that is the global sea level. And so sea level has been rising at a rate of 3.2 millimeters per year since 1992. 1992 is when NASA and the French launched a satellite into space, that is now using an altimeter to measure the sea level, the global sea level, at millimeter accuracy. Previously, we only had sea level measurements at the coast and at island stations, but now we have a true global sea level, and since then, it's been going up at an average rate of 3.2 millimeters per year. So 3.2 millimeters per year, if you think of your ruler, a 12-inch ruler is about 30 centimeters, and so this is a rate of a little over a foot per century. And that comes about through two processes. One of them is the ocean is getting warmer, and so it's expanding. And then the second part is that there's melting of Greenland and glaciers on land that's putting more water into the ocean. And so the warming ocean and the rising sea level is, in fact, a big symptom of the, what we call global warming, the overall climate change that has a strong human component to it.
Now, a few scientists suggest this ocean heating may signal the end of the alleged hiatus in global warming. First of all, do you agree there has been a pause in warming? And second, does this imply a new warm spell is arriving?
Well, yes. If you look at the global mean surface temperature, it has more ups and downs than the global sea level record, for instance. So global sea level has continued to rise. Arctic sea ice has continued to melt, for instance, but there has been the so-called pause in the global mean surface temperature. However, it looks like 2014 will be the warmest year on record by the time we get to the end of the year. It's certainly true through the first 10 months of the year. And it won't break the previous record by very much, but it's a symptom of the fact that the oceans are warm and global warming is really continuing. You know, part of this is distorted a little bit by the huge El Nino event that we had in 1997-98. So 1998 was the warmest year last century. And so if you start looking at the record with that extremely warm year that resulted in part because a lot of heat came out of the ocean, then it makes it look like it hasn't warmed that much since that time. But 1998 was really the exceptional year. What's been going on in the 2000s is actually not that far from what we might have expected. And so the 2000s certainly are a lot warmer than the 1990s. And, you know, this warming is really continuing. So this hiatus, so-called, it looks like that could be over, although it's a bit hard to tell given that this El Nino is with us. And so it's a bit hard to tell whether it's a one-year spike or whether it will really continue. But certainly conditions are very different now than they have been over the last decade or so.
Kevin Trenberth, what about your home grounds in the southern oceans around Australia, New Zealand, and the South Pole? Are oceans warming there as well?
Ah, that's a good question. And, of course, the Arctic sea ice has been melting an enormous amount, but Antarctic sea ice, if anything, has increased a little bit and spread out. But the dynamics of what goes on there is very, very different, and it relates very much to the changes in the winds. And so there have been substantial changes in winds over the southern hemisphere that have led to very dry conditions in Australia, for instance, and a lot of heat waves and wildfires are partly as a consequence. But the change in winds, one of the things that does is it tends to carry the sea ice away from Antarctica in a number of areas. And Antarctica is cold, and so this just generates more sea ice in behind it. But a lot of that sea ice is very thin, so the volume of sea ice is, we don't really know. We don't have good measurements to know exactly what the volume is doing. But the sea ice has spread out a little bit, and so the southern oceans don't appear to have warmed as much as other parts of the oceans. But, you know, given the presence of Antarctica nearby and the sea ice, you know, maybe that's not so surprising.
Yeah, it seems like it's almost polar opposites. We have the winds seemingly loosening up, certainly the jet stream meandering in the northern hemisphere, and yet tightening around the South Pole. And that's, I guess, because of the difference between a land mass in the center of the pole and an ocean in the center of the pole.
That's partly true. So in the northern hemisphere, the sea ice is limited. You know, it can't expand beyond the Arctic Ocean much in the wintertime. And so what we see is the big losses in the summer, whereas over the southern oceans, the sea ice is unlimited, but it can spread out, but can also be quite thin. But another important factor between the two hemispheres has been the ozone hole. And so the ozone hole has been a big factor in contributing to a really strong, you know, a polar vortex, I'm going to say it. It's sort of in the vernacular now, but there's a very strong circumpolar set of westerly winds in the southern hemisphere that is partly caused by the loss of ozone. And so that's, for the most part, a separate problem relative to global warming, but it's contributed to some of the changes and is probably one of the factors in the differences between the two hemispheres as well.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. Our guest is the distinguished scientist Kevin Trenberth from the Climate Analysis Section at the USA National Center for Atmospheric Research. Do warmer oceans change the amount of water in the atmosphere, the hydrological cycle of rains and snows?
Oh, very much so. So the sea surface temperatures have warmed since the 1970s by about 1 degree Fahrenheit or thereabouts. And going along with that, the normal expectation, 1 degree increase in temperature of the atmosphere produces an increase in the water holding capacity by about 4%. Now, the actual atmosphere is probably warmed by, just a slight bit more than the ocean has. And so the estimate is that over the global ocean since the 1970s, there's about 4% more moisture in the atmosphere. So this means the relative humidity has stayed about the same, but there's more moisture in the atmosphere. And so this fuels hurricanes and tropical storms. It means the storms are a bit more active as a consequence. And of course, this moisture gets caught up in any storm, and it then contributes to much heavier snows in coastal regions. And in general, much heavier rainfalls are occurring across North America. So especially east of the Rockies, there's been a substantial increase in heavy rainfalls because of the increase in moisture that's getting into the atmosphere associated with this warming.
You've been a lead author for the IPCC. Do we know how much warming caused by human greenhouse gases has gone into the Earth's oceans?
Well, the IPCC is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And so the IPCC does an assessment overall of the literature and how everything sort of hangs together and is also consistent with our expectations relating to climate models. And so it also has to wrangle with all of the aspects of natural variability. And so what we find in recent years is that the changes in the wind patterns, especially over the Pacific, seem to have altered the way in which the atmosphere and the ocean interacts. And so some of the heat that is normally going into the ocean has gone a bit deeper into the ocean. And as a result, it doesn't have quite as much influence on the surface temperatures. This is one of the factors in what we talked about just a minute ago on the so-called hiatus. And so some of the heat, it doesn't mean that the planet isn't heating up. It just means that the heat is going into somewhat different places. So some of it's gone into melting glaciers and rising sea level. Some of it's gone into Arctic sea ice, and some of it's gone into a little bit deeper into the ocean. But one of the consequences of that is that sea level rise is continuing. And in that sense, sea level rise is perhaps a better indicator overall that global warming is continuing.
Is there a limit, Kevin Trenberth, to how much heat the oceans can buffer for us?
Well, the oceans are warm on top and cold down below. The deep oceans are very cold, and so that's a stable configuration. The main way in which the oceans get mixed up is when in the wintertime, especially off the east coast of Asia and North America, so this is where the Kuroshio Current and the Gulf Stream Current in the Atlantic occur. And when there's very cold, dry air coming off the continents in wintertime, it can cool off the surface ocean. And then when the surface ocean is cool, that cold air sinks. And so convection occurs in the ocean. So the ocean is sort of the opposite of the atmosphere. In the atmosphere, we have warming that triggers convection, but in the ocean, it's cooling. And so there has been a mixing of the ocean that generally occurs partly on a seasonal basis because of the wintertime cooling. And we talked a little bit before about the North Atlantic, the fact that the North Atlantic hasn't experienced as much of these cold outbreaks in recent times means that the convection has not been as active in the North Atlantic, and the oceans have warmed at multiple levels animals as a consequence of that. So it's very difficult to pump heat down in the ocean. The ocean tends to warm and create a more stable configuration. That also means that there's less mixing in general in the oceans, and this has consequences for all of the organisms in the ocean and the amount of oxygen that's available for fish and other species. And so this more stable configuration in the oceans is a bit worrying. But mixing by winds is one way in which the ocean can indeed warm up, and changes in ocean currents, which also, you know, run up against obstacles in the ocean, islands, coastal regions, and things like that. There can be some deeper mixing that occurs in association with that kind of thing as well. So it's a bit hard to get the oceans to warm up, but some of the changes we've seen in the last decade do mean that some deeper parts of the ocean are warming a bit more than they did before.
So water takes a long time to heat and a long time to cool off. Kevin, am I right to think these hotter oceans could lead to a warming world for centuries, even after we kick the carbon habit?
That would be certainly true. And, of course, this is one of the worries. The oceans are not in equilibrium with our climate system. They're not in equilibrium with the warming. We expect warming of the oceans to occur even if we were to shut off increases in carbon dioxide and the other agents for warming that are occurring in the atmosphere. And sea level rise is apt to continue for maybe even hundreds of years after if we shut off any other warming that occurs. And so there's a very slow adjustment of the oceans as the heat slowly penetrates deeper into the ocean. And so what we're doing now has consequences for decades and even centuries into the future. And this is why scientists are quite concerned, very concerned about the global warming phenomenon. You know, by the time maybe the general public recognizes that it's a serious problem, it's a bit too late to do very much about it, because a lot of it's going to continue regardless, and we will then have to live with the consequences. So this is one of the clarion calls of scientists, that we need to worry about the fact that the oceans respond in a very slow and sluggish fashion.
As we wrap up, I have one last question for you. As you know, North Americans have been hit by crazy weather, a super Arctic chill, giant snowstorms, and then spring-like days. Do you agree with Dr. Jennifer Francis that destabilized weather may be linked to the huge annual meltback of Arctic sea ice?
I'm not entirely sure about that. I mean, part of that may well be a consequence. You know, a good example is what just happened recently in November. It seems to me that the sequence of events was that we actually had a super typhoon called Nuri that developed in the Western Pacific. It went through Japan and caused quite a bit of damage, but then it became a hybrid storm, much like Superstorm Sandy, and it developed and became a very intense and huge storm in the North Pacific, and it turns out the central pressure in that storm was the lowest on record. And so that storm kept heading north up into Alaska and even into the Arctic, and it carried a tremendous amount of warm air with it that went right up into the Arctic. And so the Arctic was exceptionally warm in the first 2 to 3 weeks of November. And of course, that pushed the cold air somewhere else. And where did the cold air come? Well, it came down barreling right across North America. And so the cold outbreak was actually coupled to the warm air outbreak that occurred. And so this is one of the complications with regard to the Arctic. There's certainly been a loss of Arctic sea ice, and that no doubt has some influences, especially on the surrounding areas, Siberia, the Canadian regions, and so on. And it affects snowfall, like there's a lake effect snowfall kind of activity that occurs as a consequence of more open Arctic ocean. But, you know, by the time you get to late November and into December, the Arctic is basically full of ice. And so the losses of sea ice in the summertime don't have a big effect as we get into the deep winter. And I think most of what's going on with regard to the Arctic is then more a consequence rather than a cause of what is going on across the world.
There you have it. In a Complex World, I'm Alex Smith from the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. We've been talking with the senior climate scientist, Kevin Trenberth. Thank you so much for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
You're most welcome.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.